It's Monday, Labor Day, you cocksuckers. The Church What's Happening Now is brought to you by Stance Socks. Listen, that old pack of white gym socks your mom used to buy you at the grocery store is now a thing of the past. Thanks God. You know why? Because Stance has changed the game. They brought art and good design in what used to be a boring old sock. Now, when you show a little ankle, you're also showing up what makes you special. Whatever you're into. They got Star Wars socks. They got Harley Davidson socks. They even got Grateful Dead inspired socks. Every football, baseball, and basketball team, they got that too. So listen, right now, the Church family, Stance, has a great offer. Go to stance.com/church and you'll get a free pair of socks with any purchase. Did you hear what I just said? A free pair of socks with any purchase. Start the fall off with some nice socks. Do something nice for yourself. Take care of yourself. That's Stance. Get a pen. STANC.com/church to get your free pair of socks. This offer is only available for limited time, so get your socks today at stance.com/church. Because if they're not Stance, they're not just socks. Also, the Church is brought to you by my bookie. Listen, let me answer you a question. If you find $100 on the street, would you pick it up? Would you keep walking around like a fucking mook? Of course you'd fucking pick it up. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting them? Tell me why. That's why you got to go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Now, let me tell you what they're going to do. They're going to double your deposit. Did you understand what I just said to you? They're going to double your deposit now. Use promo code CHURCH. Grab a pen. CHURCH to get 100% bonus on your initial deposit up to $1,000. Who the fuck do you think you're dealing with? This is mybookie.ag. Visit mybookie.ag today. Again, grab a fucking pen. Mybookie. MYBOOKIE.AG. And don't forget to use the promo code CHURCH when creating your account to claim your bonus. Listen, with MyBookieAG, you play, you win, you get paid. And check my Instagram on Thursday. I'll be dropping a little video for you, for little cocksuckers, to teach you how it's done, all right? So I'll see you guys Thursday. But for right now, go to MyBookie.ag. They'll double your first deposit now. That's MyBookie.ag. Kick this motherfucking muley. Oh, shit. You thought we were taking the day off, didn't you? You don't fuck around here at the Church of What's Happening Now. Kick this muley. Kick this motherfucker. It's Labor Day, bitches. The legend, Rich Voss. The Christ Killer, Lee Syatt. And your Uncle Joey, motherfucker. It's a beautiful day to be alive. Fucking tremendous Lenny Kravitz. What's happening?
What's happening? Man, I got a Lenny Kravitz. How's it going, man? This is not. Look at this. This is how it should be.
This is a very nice little office. That
me and Bonnie do it at a dining room table, but this is the real deal. Like, I pulled in, there was a gate. This was the real deal. I thought I was going to get my car out of impound.
No. We try. I scored this office by mistake.
This is great.
We had three other locations that were just a nightmare. And this one has, in the first 7 months here, we had a hard time. And it's been...
You're not allowed to sleep here or anything, are you?
No. But if I was a single guy and I was a comic, there's a YMCA down the corner. There's the refrigerator. You got Netflix and your notebook. That couch. Yeah. Look, that's a bed. You could put a thousand things in here.
This
What are you kidding? With parking.
Me? Yeah.
For $750 a month.
How?
Can you imagine that?
And if they said you're sleeping, you go, no, I do my stuff at night. I'm a night man.
You put the fan on at night. They got air conditioning, or you could bring something in.
What are you kidding me? I might even sublet it.
Can you believe that? This is, when I lived in Seattle and I was a struggling comic, I lived in an office. And the lady, the cleaning lady, would knock on the door every night and I wouldn't let her in. That's how they figured out.
Yeah.
I had a towel on the floor with a little pillow and a blankie. And look, no shower. You joined the gym around the corner. I was the healthiest I ever was.
Look, I talked about this on radio or podcast, and people thought I was crazy, but you go in Manhattan or in Jersey, you rent a storage space for your furniture, you know, throw a couch in there. How the fuck do they know what you're doing in your store? You go in there in the day for 3-4 hours, take a nap. You don't have to get a hotel in the day. See what I'm saying? Or I'm just saying.
It's hot in there, though.
There's ways to figure shit out.
Those storage things.
Yeah, they are.
There's no windows. There's no ventilation. You'd go crazy in one of those in the daytime.
So we went to Brazil back in the day, all of us, me, Patrice, Nor, all of us. And we're there to meet, you know, people. And I met a girl there that I started dating, right? In Brazil from New York. You know, they're all going to the house, whatever, to the place, you know, $40, whatever, robes, everything. So I met this girl. So I started dating her. And she said, well, you know, every now and then I used to date Lenny Kravitz, right, when he came into town, whatever. So, okay, now this guy's playing the garden. So she came to see me do comedy for the first time. I was at Boston Comedy Club. And she brought three friends from school that she went to college with. Now, she's never seen me. So I was hosting that night, and I came out of the gate too strong. And I was bombing so bad that I couldn't even look at her and her friends in the corner. You know, when you're I couldn't even look at them.
What year was this?
This had to be, I've been married 15 years ago. It had to be 18 or 19 years ago, maybe 20 years ago. And, you know, this is a girl that dated Lenny Kravitz, didn't watch me bomb at Boston Comedy Club. Let's say the thing didn't really last between us. They walked out. You know when they walk out and they don't even look at you either?
How embarrassing.
You know how bad that
is? That's when you know you did bad.
They can't look you in the face.
The best is when they come up to you and shake your hand. Yeah. And tell you it's going to be all right. Oh, my God. You get like four of those in your career.
Yeah.
And that's the week you get evicted. Your girlfriend leaves you for a Puerto Rican dude that plays the drums in a salsa band. Yeah,
uncut.
And then that's when that one fan comes up to you and says, you'll do better next time, and shakes
your hand. Oh, my God.
I remember my first wife and I, we went to Aruba for a week. I took her to Aruba. The day we get back, she goes, I want a divorce. I go, well, you couldn't have told me that a week earlier. You know what I mean? We
you
went
just
to
wasted
Aruba.
$800 that I could have used for the attorney.
You crazy? So now I'm depressed. I'm in New York. You know, we're talking on the phone. And next thing you know, I walk out of the Comedy Cellar and I see my car on the tow truck. And I'm going, can it get any worse? Yes. And I had no money back then. I had no money. You know, now I keep money in case of emergency everywhere. You know what I'm saying? Just like anxiety medicine. I got it stashed. But I had no money, and I had to go into the cellar and find a comic with money and get my... It just... When shit is falling apart,
oh my God,
it falls apart.
It falls apart.
It falls, really falls the fuck apart.
And when you're doing comedy, I think there's a point in your comedy career where things really do fall apart, and it's a test to see if you'll quit. It's a test from life.
Yeah.
I was at the point where... You know, we all have those stories and nights where we put our hands in our heads and said, "What?" I mean, you and I are from the same background. You and I are from the streets. You're from a savagery area, Linden or wherever that is.
Plainfield.
Yeah. Camden, same difference. And Sorkin, Neptune.
Yeah.
You know, that's a different mentality. And when I got into comedy, Rich, I don't know if it was the same for you. This was it.
I had nothing else.
How old were you when you got into comedy?
I think I was like 28.
And what were you doing before that?
Anything. Scamming. You know, I've done sales. I was bound. I mean, for years, I used to have a painting business, but I fucked that up doing, you know, blow and stuff. You know, I'm partying. And then I did whatever. Any type of sales, canvas sales out of my car, sold cars, whatever, you know.
Just scam. To maintain the habit and rent.
Just scam. You know, it was always a scam.
Always.
You know, and I talk about this. One of my best scams was I would go to garage sales and I'd find an old set of golf clubs. You know, they have them for like $5. They're just beat up old golf clubs, $5 for the set. So I would buy them. Then I would go to the dealer and go, yo, man, give me a gram on credit. And I'll leave my clubs as collateral. Don't sell my clubs. Let me tell you how many drug dealers in my town have old garage sale golf clubs.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it was a real good scam. You know, so I did whatever I could to get over and whatever it was. But then when I started comedy, like I knew, because I grew up loving comedy, you know, Pryor, Murphy. I listened to old stuff, Steve Landisberg, Bob Newhart, you name it. I just love comedy. Then I went to a couple clubs with this dude that he was my dealer, you know, and we went to some clubs.
What were the clubs you went to?
I went to one in New Jersey called Penny Arcade.
Okay.
And I saw who just passed away, Mike Reynolds. I go, this is the funniest man alive. I think it was him and Mitchell Walters. I'm going, this is the funniest I've ever seen. I go, this is great. Then we went to Catch a Rising Star a couple times, and I saw, you know, all these New York comics and Hiram Cass, and I'm going, this guy's great, you know, and just the comics that were going on 30 years ago, 29 years ago in New York. I go, this, and then I started to, you know, I didn't know what I was doing in the beginning, but I know I got to do this, you know, and then maybe a year of whatever, I started booking one-nighters in my town so I could host. And then other guys like me that were booking one-nighters in like Connecticut, Long Island, I would go, you could work my gig if I could work yours. Then we would trade.
You have something to work.
We would trade, you know, and I brought in guys. I had guys at my one-nighter, you know, like back then, Dennis Wolfberg, Joe Bolster, Mulrooney. I had Richard Jenny opening for Mulrooney, you know, and Richard Jenny, you know, Mulrooney, I go, just bring whoever you want. So, they get to the gig. And Jenny's like, he's got this attitude, right? And he goes, I don't know if you know who I am, but I'm Richard Jenny. I work Catch a Rising Star. I go, well, you're working here for $60 tonight, right? But he, and one of the best comics throughout the 80s and 90s, hands down. And he had an attitude from day one because he knew he was that good. You know what I mean? And I always got along with these guys.
I got along with Richard Jenny.
So did
really
I.
Well.
Yeah.
God rest his soul. He taught me a lot. I learned. I worked a few weeks with him, and just watching him, I was like,
Whoa. Did you ever see Dennis Wolfberg work?
No.
Man, this guy, clean powerhouse. He was just killed. Same with all those guys back then, John Mulrooney. There was tons of them that used to just slaughter on stage.
I heard John Mulrooney was a killer.
Oh, yeah, killer. Crowd work, the best crowd work, and you know, real good-looking girls loved him. He just go up there and slay. And there was such, in the 80s, there was so much work. So many, you know, in Jersey, New York.
What year did you get into this racket?
I've been doing it 35 years. Because I got 33 years clean, and I was getting high for at least two years in the business.
So you're 35 years clean.
No, 33 years
33
clean.
33 years clean.
But I was getting high when I started.
The
first couple years.
Okay.
At least two. So I've been doing it for like 35 years. But the first 2 years was in a blackout. But, you know, so 35. If you think about it, if I had a goddamn job at a post office, I could have retired and had a pension by now. I could be living work-free. But as a comic, you don't quit. You quit when you're dead. You can't quit this. How could you quit? What else am I going to do? You know, Bonnie's like, let's move to L.A. and I'll get a writing job. I go, fuck that. I'm not, I work in, you know, I'm in New York. That's my base. I could work in the city and, you know, and I go on the road from New York.
You still go on the road every week, I heard.
A lot, yeah. Pretty much. You know, one, you know, I got to keep coming up with new material. You know, I'm putting out my sixth album. It's ready now. But I might not release it till around Christmas, but I'll put it on Sirius now. But I got to keep writing and creating to stay as relevant as I can. You know comics that get caught up in shit they were doing 10 years ago.
That's terrible.
You know, are you kidding me? You know, I can't talk about Nixon. I got, you know, I got, what am I, you gotta keep creating. So when I go on the road, I'm doing an hour minimum so I could do new material. Like New York, there's guys in New York, you know, they'll bounce around and do spots and they'll work out. I work my stuff out on the road because I'm going to get paid and work out new material. You know what I'm saying? So
you don't go out there in a week?
Where, to New York?
Yeah.
I'll go to New York one or two nights at the most. But if I'm in town, I'll work the weekend in
New
York.
Okay, see, that's what I do. If I'm to the point where, you know, from 91 to 2004, I was out 7 nights a week, you know.
Yeah.
You were out 7 nights a week. And then it trimmed down to 5 nights a week. And then it was still animalistic. You know, you're out every night. And once my wife had the baby, I got a little older. I can't go to the store every night till 1 in the morning. It just, I would be dead because of the sleep issues. I don't sleep well. So that means I wouldn't go to bed till 2, and I'd be wide awake at 6. That means by Wednesday, I got to cancel everything on my agenda because I can't fucking move.
Yeah.
I get that tired. So I've learned to now, it's Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. If I'm in town, I'll try to do those two shows at the Comedy Store. So I'll do the main room Thursday.
Yeah.
Originals, that's 5 spots. If I stay home the whole month, that's 20 spots. That's not bad.
That's not bad.
Plus I'm writing. And you're doing 2 podcasts a week. You're doing somebody else's. And I'm being the most important thing I can be, a father.
That's
what changes. You know, last night I was looking at my daughter at the table. I have a podcast with her on Tuesdays about science, I was telling you.
Oh, yeah.
We don't tape it or nothing. We just do it to entertain her so she reads. And I was sitting there going, you know, it's a shame I have to go out 7 nights a week. You know, like I have to go out at night. I know she personally doesn't like it. She lives with it. I explain that we keep the lights on. She doesn't like it. I just know. I know her type. But I feel like I'm in the mafia. What would you do if you were in the mafia and you were known as the top hit man? And one day, by mistake, you got your girlfriend pregnant. And now you got these 2 kids. And every day when you leave, you don't know if you're coming home.
Yeah.
You don't know if you're coming home. I might get into a shootout. Today's the day that they might find the gun from 68. Or today's the day that I get arrested for something, you know? And I feel the same way now. Like, between you and I love going on the road. I love it. I loved it when I was getting high.
Oh, yeah.
When I was getting high. Oh, my God. I could stay clean for 3 days because I knew I was going away for 4 and nobody would see me. It was part of the addiction. Oh, my God. Yeah, it's easy to stay clean on a Tuesday because it was coming Wednesday night. Yeah. They're already waiting for me in Houston. The package is in. In Carlito's way? The holes are dug. The sandbags are ready. Like, I'd be ready to go. Now that I have no addiction, the road, I still love doing comedy, but I know I can't go out every weekend.
Well, here's the thing. In New York, I could, like, this weekend I'm in New York, I'm at a club, and I'm doing it like a door deal, whatever. It's a showcase club, but I'm headlining it. So it'll be, instead of 3 acts doing 20 minutes, I do an hour, and I'll get everybody's money. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
But then, you know, and if I wanted to, which I didn't, I could have put late spots in at the Cellar. You know, I could walk out of New York in the city on a weekend with $1,000 or more. Or if I'm headlining Gotham, then it's real money, you know, when you're headlining. So, but I'll do spots. I won't go crazy. If I'm in town on a weekend, I'll do a couple spots at the Stand, one at the Cellar, like 3 spots on a Friday, 3 on a Saturday. I might go in on a Tuesday, you know what I mean? But when I go on the road, you know, and I won't go for more than a week. You know, I always have to come home. I have to come home. So I'll do, what, Thursday through Saturday or Sunday, and then come home, be home Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever, you know. And if I go out again, and a lot of stuff on the East Coast also is, you know, say I'm working Baltimore or D.C., you know, I'm going in for Friday, Saturday, and I'm going to drive home Saturday night after the gig. 4 hours, whatever. Drive, come back from Boston, Connecticut. So, You know, and now in October, November, we got this big tour we're starting. The Creeps with Kids tour, which it's me, Bobby Kelly, Florentine, and Bennington. This is a monster show.
It's a monster show.
We did one show in Pennsylvania from beginning to end. It's just Murderer's Row, just beginning to end. It's creepswithkids.com. So we got this tour October, November. And, you know, it's Friday, Saturday, East Coast. We got Chicago and Pittsburgh. But, you know, you're with your friends. I'm out doing comedy with my friends in a theater. No chicken fingers in the front row. No checks being dropped, you know. And it's just, I'm looking forward to that, you know.
You know, it's crazy when we first start comedy. And I didn't get the formula till my second, 2.5 years. And then I got the formula and I put it into work. The formula is get on stage and write.
Yeah.
That's the formula.
That's it.
Nothing else works. Just get on stage and write. Get on stage and write. Dig in. Get into the community. Get your 5 friends. Everybody books a room. Yeah. You know, you always got something to work with. For me, it was the Boulder Broker. You don't get burnt out. What you do when you're first an open micer is you bomb. You bomb because you're burnt out. You don't even know you're burnt out. But you don't have time to burn out. You can't. Like, I've never heard an open micer say, I'm taking a week off. When you're an open micer, you never take a week off. That doesn't even exist in your mind.
No, that's...
Unless you get hit by a car. And unless your mother's passed away, and even then, the third night of the week, you better go do some fucking comedy.
Yeah, or at least at the funeral.
Because that's what keeps you going. Yep. It really does. People have no idea. But as you get older and other things come into your life, you know, for me, it was a child and a podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, I knew that I wanted to put time and effort into the podcast to get my word out, to put my heart into it, to get my, you know, and it takes time. You got to think of ideas and you have to get guests. And so for me to be fair to the audience, because I don't want them to ever feel like I'm just going through the motions.
Yeah.
Like I told Theo last week, Theo Vaughn booked a movie. Congratulations to Theo.
I've heard of him.
He's in Atlanta training right now. Great guy. Yeah. And he was really concerned about he was very concerned about taking the film because of canceling. And I said, Caroline's, Comedy on Broadway, they'll all be there next year. This movie with Chris, whatever, only comes once. That's number one. Number two, I could tell you're burnt out. They've destroyed you.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, by the way, I just canceled Bray next week, and I can't do it. I go, you can't do it no more.
Take a break.
I was here for years and more. I've been here for 22 years.
Uh-huh.
And I watched from Bobby Slayton to the girl, that Wendy Liebman.
Yeah.
To all of them go from working 52 weeks to working nothing. And I would say, first off, Ralphie. Let's take Ralphie, for example. Ralphie was a dear friend to you and a dear friend to me. I learned so much from Ralphie on not what to do. Like, it was burnout to the max. And I know at 300 pounds what it's like. I know what my knees feel like after a show, and I got to go back to the room and put ice on my knees after 2 shows. I put my feet up and watch Sopranos or whatever the fuck I watch on Netflix. So I can't imagine what that kid was going through. You know,
Nonstop.
You know, he would go to markets. I would go, you were just there. But the agents, he didn't know. They were just booking them. So we learn from the people who come in front of us. We learn, you know. So for me, the formula that worked, so my wife, my daughter, the podcast, and the road wouldn't work out is the life I'm living right now.
Yeah.
The summer only went out 1 week a month.
Well, today, they go, oh, we got to move your date in Minneapolis. And I went, that's great. Because the week after, I'm in Vegas. I go, good, I get to stay home a week.
1 week.
I go, well, we'll move it to May or June next year. And plus, I don't want to go to Minneapolis in the winter. I go, let's wait till next year. And so it didn't faze me because I know I'm going to work it. And, you know, we've done a million things. Like you do see, back in the day, you go, oh, I got to get to sitcom. I got to do this, do that. You know, I did Last Comic Standing, and I had a big opportunity then because it was the first season. I could have moved to L.A. and shit would have happened. But I go, I'm not leaving my kids. My daughters were, I don't know, 12 and 10 then or whatever. They were 14 and 12. I go, look, if it doesn't happen on the East Coast, it ain't going to happen. But I tell you what, I was there watching my kids grow up, play basketball, do, you know, whatever. So now there's so many things. You create your own projects. Bonnie and I have fucking, you know, we made a movie. We did this fucking roast. You know, I do all my own CDs. You know, we got our own projects. You know, we do special shows at you know, with Montreal, Moon Tower, Skangfest, you know, would you bang them? You know, so, you know, you could do your own shit. This year right here, this was not a heard of 15 when we started.
No.
This wasn't heard of. You know, you got your own studio. You're a fucking radio show that you put together yourself. You see, you know what I'm saying? You know, you like, and that's why back in the day, I used to respect, you know, like Larry the Cable Guy, Dane Cook, all these people, because they went around the industry and made shit happen on their own and became fucking multimillionaires.
Listen, an agent never made a career.
No.
Okay, that's the mistake. I love when people go, well, I signed with a new agent, my life's going to change. Your life's not going to change.
No, you signed with a new car salesman.
You still got to go in that fucking, yeah. You still got to go in those breakdowns and find your roles if you want to be an actor. And you know what? You got to fax your avails. Remember when you used to fax your avails or email your avails?
Do you remember sending press kits?
Oh, my God. Press kits with the fucking fake article. The Washington Reporter. Joe Diaz is a natural. That's the Washington Reporter.
One of my things on my resume here was I opened for Richard Belzer. Then I put in parentheses, big deal. But did you send out a resume? Yeah.
Resume. And I used to send out blank tapes.
Yeah.
To mess with them.
Because you know they weren't watching.
No. You go. How many times you get paid and you see 2,000 tapes with 6 inches of dust on?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And the poor bastard is somewhere in Minneapolis going, man, I'm telling you, he's going to call any day. He's going to watch my tape. They don't watch the tape.
They don't watch those tapes. They taped over them. They made movies on them.
It's hysterical how I remember remember Kevin Kearney?
Yes.
Remember he used to book the
catcher.
Where is he?
Huh?
Where is Kevin?
He's in Vegas. I don't know. He's not. I don't know what he's doing, but he lives in Vegas.
Okay.
I'm pretty
nice
sure.
Nice guy.
He started in Philly. I knew him from Philly.
Right. I tormented him for 10 years to get the catcher eyes.
Yeah.
You know, send me a tape. I would send him blank tapes. I like your tape, but I got to find the spot for you. You're dirty, blah, 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 blah. It took 10 years, and one day Schubert called me, and I walked in the door. You know, it was like you were chasing this dream, and one day, after all the work you put in to get in, nothing, all of a sudden, a guy just calls you and says, you're working this club with me, and you're like, oh, it's that easy.
Well, I remember working in Pittsburgh. I was at the improv,
Creepy Brothers.
And I went and hung out with you. Joey's in town, and I drove over to your place. You were with the Snyder Brothers.
The Creepy Brothers.
Yeah, the Funny Bone, or whatever the fuck.
That's why
I did my first CD at that club. The one with that fucking incline behind it, ready to crash through the building. But I don't know if you remember this, but
yes.
I came down and we were hanging out.
That had to be 2005.
It was, holy fuck, it was... Easily
2006, yes.
It was easily back then, you know. It was back in the day, but we were both in town. I go, fucking Joey's. And I don't even know how the fuck I knew you back then. How the fuck did I know you or we knew each other?
I was a fan of yours.
You were the one?
I was a fan of yours before I started comedy. I watched you on like a bee or something black.
Oh, yeah.
You were like the only white guy on something, and I always remembered you. I wasn't into comedy. I was bugging people and doing eight balls. I was doing time. Comedy was not... This is 88.
Yeah.
89, 90. 90, when I got out of the joint, was when I started watching comedy very quietly.
Uh-huh.
Very quietly. I wouldn't tell people I was thinking about it. People in jail told me, a couple friends on the car lot told me. I was thinking about it, so I was watching BET tapes, Joe Torre warming up for the BET, Martin Lawrence. I studied the Rodney Dangerfield,
Young Comedians.
With Hicks diced that episode. Yeah. It's just an encyclopedia.
I was at that taping. No, I went and watched that taping.
No, you weren't.
At Dangerfields.
With Dice and all those
things? It was the Dice one, I think. It was either the Dice one. Yeah, because it was
Schimmel.
Hicks.
Schimmel.
Hicks was on. I think maybe even Carol Leifer. Maybe.
Carol Leifer, yes. Carol Leifer. The black dude that made the movie with his credit cards.
Oh, Robert Townsend.
Robert Townsend.
Yeah, I was at one of the tapings. It was either that
Were
one or the one
with
Kennison.
Were you already doing comedy then?
Yeah, I just went to watch.
Wow.
Standing, you know, in Dangerfields. And I stood in the hallway. And I'm pretty, because I knew Hicks. Not I wasn't like... Yeah, I knew Hicks from working with him. Not like we didn't call each other, but when we saw each other, you know, he liked me and I, you know. So, but you're saying, so you studied that. That was some serious fucking comedy back then, those young comedians.
Still to this day, when I go on a bombing streak.
Yeah.
You know, when you go on a little, to get back to basics, I will watch that tape. Because that's the fundamental tape. Kennison at the end, Roseanne Barr, Robert Schimmel. It has so many different styles that in one tape. For me, it was always the blueprint of comedy. Lenny Clark opened up the one, and the other one was opened up by the guy that wore the leather jacket that used to rap on stage, a little bit of white dude. Come on now.
Oh,
he's Menza Mort.
Oh.
Barry Sobel.
Barry Sobel, yes.
Barry Sobel is Menza Mort. You know,
Barry Sobel.
He shows up with a young kid that looks like Peter Davidson and all his shows. Right? He always shows up with a young kid that looks like Pete Davidson.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Don't say a word. He wouldn't say a word. Just shut your mouth.
Because the kid's crying inside.
The kid's 18. He would show up at the Comedy Store every week with the same little broken kid, like 18.
That's so funny. That's so fucking funny. That's so funny. that's hilarious.
My God. But that was the blueprint for me. And then my brother bumped into you. My street brother bumped into you at a benefit that you used to do. And you had a brief conversation with him. And after that, we just became friends. I think I did... Opie and Anthony, and you were there when they had the Puerto Rican bodyguard.
Yeah. What's his Mr. Poe or something?
Mr. Poe. Yeah, is he still around?
No, he's not with. Well, right. No one's around. But
nobody's around yet.
Poe. Well, this dude was a fucking karate motherfucker.
Right.
He was bad.
He was a big time, but he's a little crazy.
Yeah.
He kept calling me like, "I want to be your bodyguard. I don't need a bodyguard. I need a career. I need a bodyguard. I need a fucking career.
I'm going to be the only middle with a bodyguard.
Yeah, I'm a middle with a bodyguard.
he's a middle with a posse.
Oh my God, what is this guy talking about? He was a nice guy. Yeah. But that's when I met you. And I think we ran into each other in the airport. And then one night, I just started seeing old footage of you. I started watching you and Patrice. And then the clinker was my wife's half American Indian. If you go to a house and meet her mother, you could tell they're Indians. And I'm in the bathroom washing my face or whatever. And I'm like doing this shit. I'm looking for a towel. And I think we're watching, I think it was Tough Crowd. And you said something about when I was in grammar school, they told me to go sit Indian style.
Oh, yeah.
So I would get a bottle of gin and go lay in the sewer.
Bottle of whiskey and land in the curve.
Now, my wife's American Indian. I don't want to laugh. We both looked at each other with that look, and we busted out. And she goes, "That is the best joke I've ever heard in my life. What's his name?" And ever since that, she's been your biggest fan.
Oh, that's funny.
Like she said, "If I didn't have to take it to karate, I'd go over and give him a hug." Because finally, somebody made an American Indian joke. We both just went, like, I was like, "Oh, shit, that joke was funny." And then
thank you.
Rogan told me a joke you said one night in Caroline's. That we can't really repeat here.
Oh,
one of the funniest things.
That was that Dangerfield.
He said that you threatened him with the joke.
He said, he goes, open with it. And the one about Robin Gibbons?
Right, yes. Right.
He goes, open with it.
Oh, my God.
And silence. But only one person laughing.
Joe Rogan. Howling. He loves that shit. He loves it. He loves all that stuff.
We used to do,
oh my God,
in Jersey, we did a couple one-nighters, me and him, when I was married to my ex-wife. Because I remember me and him working in Seaside, New Jersey, because my ex-wife was with me. And we took a walk to the boardwalk or whatever. This was before he did news radio.
Oh, yeah.
This is way, he just came down from Boston or something. And somehow, you know, because you could tell when certain people are not right. And we were both not right. You know what I'm saying? There's comic, like Keith Robinson has the best fucking theory on comics. There's comics like us that sat in the back of the bus. And then you get the front of the bus comics that did their homework and shit. But the back of the bus comics were always like fucking ass, you know, they're troublemaking kids. You know, we're back of the bus comics going to school.
I grew up doing comedy.
Yeah.
You know, when I think of comedy, I learned the gift of comedy on the number one bus from Jersey City to North Bergen.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the number one route in Jersey City was a methadone clinic. So after they give you the bottle of methadone, they give you a bus pass. And 20 junkies would get on there. And we'd get on the bus on 39th Street. And it was torture.
It was
spitballs and fuck. You know, we'd throw things at them.
That was kids. So you had, kids from school took city buses?
We all took the city bus.
City buses to school?
City bus on Kennedy Boulevard. There was no school buses.
We had school buses, the yellow ones.
No, I'm from North Bergen. It's the second hilliest city in the country. And I would have to walk both up those hills to Kennedy Boulevard. Or somebody's parent would give you a ride up the hill, and then you would catch the number one bus, and it was fucking pure comedy. The junkies that would go get the fix at 8:30 in the morning, and I would have to be in school at 8:45, and I'd get on that bus, and they'd be nodding with the Daily News open, and I'll never forget one with the drool from his lip connected to the paper, and there was just a puddle, and us just fucking laughing, like just laughing, throwing shit at him. And then I remember that I had a fart, and I farted. And it went right in his mouth because I sat in towards the back of the chair. First off, he was in a chair that's sideways.
Yeah.
They would sit there by themselves and fucking be bouncing, and his mouth was open. So I farted on the chair, and it was a bank shot off the chair right into his fucking mouth. It went directly into his mouth. I'll never forget that guy.
We fucking... Like, this is kids going to school. It's like, it's almost like you're going to war. We took just a school bus, and it was the fucked up kids in the back of the bus. But we didn't have city buses. You know, it wasn't like that. You know, sitting on the bus with fucking heroin addicts and
fucking tremendous. You can't write that shit.
It's crazy. I guess that's New York City, too. I mean, these kids are taking city buses and subways to school and shit. You know, now kids are so fucking protected, you know. So she's got to walk to school now, Raina, because if you live less than 2 miles, you're on your own. They took away the buses. We're 1.9 miles.
2 miles?
2 miles. You got to live, you know, or else pay. And we went to pay, but nobody else on the block would pay. Only me and Bonnie. It was $1,000 to get a private bus. And we go, so here's our $1,000 check, but not enough people to win. So now she's got to walk to school, you know, and I got 2 miles each way to school. Forget it. That'll take forever. So I'll get her a bicycle or something. I don't know. Fuck it. Or she's on her own. But
you drive her? You've been driving?
Well, we don't, it doesn't start till next week, September. Last year she was in now she's in middle school. She was in fifth grade and had a bus. But now 6th and 7th, middle school don't have a bus.
Yeah, she can't walk no more.
2 miles? I'm not in third. What?
I was in 6th grade last year.
You were in 6th grade last year?
I was in 5th grade.
Oh, you were in 6th grade. Sorry, mind your business. What's the big deal? No one's going to question us.
Hilarious. You're going to have to give her a ride.
Yeah. She can't walk 2 miles?
No. In today's world, that just...
No. Or unless you start dating somebody in high school that has...
No. It's crazy in today's world how we were raised, and especially you and I, and how protective. Like, I wouldn't let my daughter walk to Laurel Canyon. I wouldn't let my daughter walk to Colfax from where I live. But I'll tell you what, I guess it was okay for me to run across the street on Broadway on 89th Street when I was five.
Yeah.
My mother told me, don't no cruce like I, don't cross the street. Me and my buddies would cross the street just to see if we wouldn't get hit by a car.
Jesus.
Do you understand? So, like, I'm a hypocrite because when my wife came home a couple weeks ago and told me the camp was taking her to the beach, I almost had a heart attack. I'm like, you didn't tell me about this in the beginning. She goes, yes, I did. I go, I wouldn't have signed on.
Really?
I go, yeah, you better go to the beach with them. They go, we're not allowed. So for three Wednesdays in a row, I kept it together. But from 11 to 2, my heart was in my hand.
Yeah.
You're taking my daughter. If something happens, you understand I'm going to fucking kill you.
Well,
I'm going to go in blasting first. So you better take good care. I went to the camp and I pulled the counselor over. I tried to give her half a yard to let her know that if you take this half a yard, you're responsible. Something happens to this kid, I'm going to break your fucking skull. Do you understand? They took him to the museum in Long Beach, which I was petrified.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it was okay for me, for the school to take me to the... where they took in New York and New Jersey, your first trip was the Statue of Liberty or whatever. And I still remember being in North Jersey and them taking us to Betsy Ross's house in Philadelphia and the Nutcracker Suite and whatever, you know. And no, my mom didn't complain. She signed the waiver.
Well, we used to... Well, one, I took her to the beach on the other day to Santa Monica.
Right, I remember.
And I fucking... First of all, I didn't want to go in the water, so I wore jeans. You could tell I was from the East Coast because I'm sitting on the beach with fucking jeans and a fucking T-shirt. But I had to walk down to the water to watch her, and she's going all the way the fuck out. And I'm having a fucking anxiety attack. I'm going, come, you're out there. I don't want to fucking I don't want to fuck my wallet up and my phone going in to save you. Move the fuck in. And I'm having anxiety attacks. And I couldn't even imagine somebody else, and I'm not there. And she's, you know what I'm saying? I couldn't imagine that.
Well, thank God she's a goofball, my daughter, and she's into seashells.
Yeah.
She's into catching those live little crabs.
That's what she was doing.
Thank God. Thank God. She likes the water a little bit, but thank God. You know, but I'm a hypocrite because, you know, I wouldn't let her. If she came to me today and said, I'm going to walk to the corner on Colfax. There's a little liquor store there.
Right.
They sell candy. I would absolutely tell her no. It's 60 yards.
Yeah.
But at six, I don't know how many times I made the jaunt.
I used to walk to school from kindergarten till we took the bus. I mean, I would kindergarten, first grade, and I was walking, you know, whatever, half to school back then. Everybody walked to school back then. We didn't have a bus. I didn't have a bus till fifth grade because it was way far. And junior high school, I don't know because I didn't really go that much. I just went to sell weed.
Did you quit high school?
Huh?
Did you quit high school?
Man, I was in 10th grade. I was in English class. I go, can I go to the bathroom? He gave me a pass, and I never came back.
Really?
But I would just go to school fourth, fifth, or whatever, lunch periods. And I hang out in all three lunch periods with different crews. And I sell some smoke up there or get high, hang by the heater where it was warm, and then, you know, fucking go home.
Did you ever get your GED?
No.
I got mine.
You got one?
I had one before. I had to get one before you go to prison.
Oh.
So your point levels go up so that they don't put you in a shitty prison. So I went and got my GED. That's what you got to do to get an extra point or two or taken off. You have a high school diploma. So you were doing comedy 2 years when you realized that drugs were getting in the way of everything?
It had nothing to do with comedy. I go, either I'm gonna die or end up in jail.
Now, your wife had already disappeared.
No, I didn't even know my wife. My kids had never seen me high. I was single.
So my kids are married the first time, you were single?
I was clean.
Clean, oh, yeah. Really? Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. I thought that's what ended the whole thing.
No, she never seen me high. None of them. None of my kids ever seen me high.
God bless you, brother. I didn't know.
They're 28 and 26, so I got 33 years. No, I was going to die. I'd go to jail because, you know, I was just out of my fucking mind. It didn't matter, you know, how to get it, where to get it, you know. You know, you'd walk into places up in 158th in Amsterdam and, you know, dudes holding, you know, pieces to your head. Didn't faze me. I do this on stage too, it's true. Like, I put myself in positions where I could have easily been shot, robbed, whatever. no fear. And now at my age, and this is, I said, I'm scared I'm going to slip in the shower. I'm scared.
It's crazy that I'm scared to go out at night.
Yeah. It's scary. Because you think about it. You know, I've come back when my car's, you know, years ago at the train station, you see the window broken. They took my radio. They broke the car. But I go, how am I going to get mad? I did the same, you know. I'm the victim. You know what I mean?
It comes back. It always comes
back. It comes back. So, yeah, I got clean because I had to. I would be dead. And
did you go to a rehab?
For 5-day detox, 28-day rehab.
And then the program carried you through since day one.
Well, yeah. No, the desire to stay clean. I mean, I shot an hour special at an NA convention. You know, it's fucking, they're trying to sell it now. My management, this fucking thing it's fucking really cool.
It's a masterpiece.
I'll show you the beginning after we're done this. I'll just show you the minute of it. But, you know, it's shot. It's never been done. Never have they allowed cameras in an NA convention. Not a meeting. It's a big convention. And obviously, I don't show the audience. But I'm doing comedy and doing recovery comedy. You know, shit I can't do in a club because they don't get it. You know, they just don't get it. And the special is so fucking cool. Meetings and 12-step programs. And a lot of my friends are all in recovery. You know what I mean? I mean, I hang with a crew that were all fucked up when we were younger, you know?
Did you know Jimmy when he was getting high?
Who, no.
Or Norton, no. Or Florentine,
no.
Any of those
no,
guys?
No, I didn't know any of them. No, and that's the thing about comedy too. And I think we're all decent comics, but we hung around with so many good comics. You had to be good, like Patrice, Keith, Billy Burr, Norton, Bobby Kelly. You know, when you're surrounded by great, good comics, they'll call you out on shit. We used to sit at the cellar and do hack court. And if somebody had a hack bit, we'd bring it up and do hack court. So we hung around. And a lot of the guys I hang around with are don't get high. They don't drink, you know. And I was working with some comic recently, and he was talking about how he's getting high on stage. And I walked up after, and I go, come on, are you serious? Peel your face from fucking doing meth all night, or, you know, sell your mom's car, then talk to me about getting fucking high. You know, I don't want to hear about your bottom where you fucking passed out on the front lawn. You know, talk to me when you're fucking, when everything's gone. You know what I mean? Everything. Spiritually, emotionally, you know, financially, bankrupt, completely, everything's gone. You got nothing. Sleeping on your mom's floor. That's what I did. Or wherever you could sleep, you know. And now I look back, I got, you know, shit, I put kids through college. I got a townhouse. I got, you know what I mean? Like, that's why I couldn't get high now.
Do you think that sometimes, what? Does it occur to you that maybe you had a couple different lives? Because you're a little older than I am,
yeah.
Like 2 years or something. Yeah. I'm 56.
Yeah.
And I sit here, and I don't think of recovery stories. I think of where I was 12 years ago, 13 years ago. Like, I think about 2007 a lot, how I was broken. I was broken, Rich. I was doing
it. Yeah.
I was getting heroin mailed out from Jersey. Right after 9/11, they were getting it in Newark, $3 bags of heroin. And I would do a little line every Monday. And I wouldn't do coke the rest of the week. And for a summer, I didn't do coke. And I'm like, I'm onto something. I have to call 2020 and tell them I know how to get rid of cocaine addiction. I mean, I was, that's how crazy I was. I know how to beat cocaine addiction. Do a little line of heroin every Monday. I thought I was like Louis Pasteur. I thought I had invented something. This is how crazy I was. The writer's strike, the longest yard coming out, everybody got a call. Tracy Morgan got a call. Yeah. Chris Rock got a TV show. The other black guy, Terry Crews, got on Chris Rock's show. Everybody got a show. Goldberg got a race car show. Everybody got love, except me. So, and throughout the whole movie, they're telling me, so I was broken emotionally, financially. I mean, when I quit, my wife had to take out a loan for me to pay my debts. I was probably down 14 G's in child support. I was down. The final number was $636 a month for 6 years. I had to pay a loan back, $636 a month.
Wow.
But I still owed the attorneys money from my divorce in 91. You know, do you know I just, about a year ago, paid one of my old drug dealers, one of the few that really deserved that, that really put up with a lot of my shit, that I really put through hell. Like, I would hide money on them and tell them I left the money, and then it got ripped off. I don't know what you're talking about. And ended up sleeping with his ex-wife. I mean, I put him through the margins. I put him through hell. But he, you know what? He came to me like a man one day, and he goes, hey, man, can I talk to you about something? He goes, I have a kid with her, and I really want to reconcile with her. As a man, would you stop messing around with her just for a weekend? And I shook his hand, and I never talked to that girl again. Because he was a man. I always respected him. And about 3 years ago, he hit me up. Hey, how you doing? Congratulations. I said, bro, send me your address. I didn't forget about the $1,600. Wow. I never forgot. I owed him $1,600. He would bring me a gram, and I'd give him $100. He'd go, what about, come on, who's your buddy? Nah, I can't do it. I'd have to talk him into it half the time. For 2 years, I put this guy through. I put all my dealers through.
Yeah.
I put all my dealers through. I had one dealer who would leave me coke on his motorcycle, and I would, in his garage, I'd have to open up the garage and go under the seat, and I wouldn't leave the $50 either. He would call me the next day, what happened to the money? I left it there. My fucking roommate, that cocksucker. I remember going to his house one night. I talked to him.
Uh-huh.
Like, these are the stories that when you tell them, and you have these to the end, I mean, and you think back at them, and they're funny, but at the same time, they're so sad and tragic. What you were doing and the people around you were doing. This guy was a black dude who I loved.
Yeah.
I still talk to him. I still talk to my ex-drug dealer because I put him through so much abuse, especially this guy. So I knew this guy was a boozer. When he was boozing, I'd wait till he get booed, and I'd go to his house. His girlfriend would go, he passed out. What are we doing? I go, he left me something in his pocket. And I would go in his pocket and take whatever it was, whether it was an 8-ball or a half a gram, I'd take it. Or it could be an ounce of coke.
In his pocket.
In his pocket. And then I delete. And he called me next day. Well, what'd you take out of my pocket? I don't know, maybe a gram. I'll give you the 60 tomorrow. I did that to him for years. He would come to my house some nights and go, man, my girlfriend threw me out. And I remember one time he came over with a bag of fried fish and my cat attacked him. My cat just jumped on him and he gave him the fish. But when he was passed out, I would take all the coke out of his pocket. He would wake up and go, man, I could have sworn I had 26 grams. I woke up with 21. You know, people don't, like, you ever think of those stories of shit you did and go, who was that Rich Voss?
Well, like, this dude I knew came up from Florida. My mom was away for the weekend. So he came up from Florida, stayed in my house. He brought an ounce of some of the best. I mean, this was amazing.
What year was this?
So right towards my end. It was 33 years ago, whatever, 34 years ago, 35.
So 35 has to be what? 30 is...
89, 90. Yeah, probably around 87.
It was still good then.
It was, he brought it from Florida. He came up and he fell asleep on the couch. Man, you don't fall asleep leaving that around. I cut it. I took an eighth out, put an eighth in of cut. You couldn't tell. And you know, the dude's, and I'm still, he's sleeping, just don't wake up. You know, this girl, I met this girl in Boston. I was working Boston, Massachusetts. I'm not going to spend my money. I'm not going to spend it. Come Friday, Saturday night, you know, I'm doing all these one nighters. I had like $600. And back then, that was a lot of money, $600 or $700. I met this waitress. Next thing you know, from Worcester, Mass, I drove back to New York City. Spent all my money, got a hotel. Then I had to drive her back. I was home. I had to drive her back and still do Sunday night up in Boston at Nick's, right? With no money, driving back to Boston. My nose started bleeding. I'm holding the shirt, right? And like my clothes is up there in a paper bag, you know? And then I had to drive back home again. Now I'm broke. So I go, well, this girl said to me, her sister wants an ounce. I go, well, I'll do that. I'll rip her off easily. I mean, how hard would that be? So we were setting it up, but then I ended up in rehab, right? Because I would have ripped her off. We ended up in rehab. I ended up in rehab. 2 years later, I'm working down in Florida at the comic strip, and that girl who I would, she was in the audience with her boyfriend, who was a monster. If I would have ripped her off, what, are you kidding me? They would have found me. They would have found me. So, but that was my bottom, was like weeks later, I ended up in rehab after driving from Boston and then back and then back up. I had a fun night. Don't get me wrong. It was a fun night. But
why did you go all the way back to New York?
Because we couldn't find nothing up in Boston. I didn't know anybody up there.
You've told stories like that, like going from like, where is it, San Diego back to like,
I went to Ontario one night, yeah. The improv.
There it is, yeah.
An hour, 10 minutes to Ontario. I get to my hotel room. I set the sleep apnea machine up. I'm ready to go to bed, and I'm like, what, are you crazy? I drove all the way back to Hollywood to get a G-Bo and all the way back to Ontario to do it. I missed radio. The improv banned me for like 2 years. This had to be 2006. They banned me for 2 years, the improv.
It's crazy.
And then I got a, yeah, and then I got a call and I started the Bray Improv, the dirty show.
But that's funny.
They believed in me, yeah.
You said, though, I had different lives. Yeah, but it's all different lives in one life, because I wouldn't be where I'm at now.
Without those lives, without, right, without, in the same way.
Okay, I wouldn't have raised my kids the way I raised them without having parents that weren't the best parents. You know what I mean? Just selfish. Not my mom. My mom was, you know, she had to raise three kids. But then you get, you know, someone, like, you know, your dad's coming to visit you. You haven't seen him in weeks, so you're standing by the window. There's daddy. And all of a sudden, detectives jump out of the bushes and lock him up. So who are you mad at? Your mom for setting them up and using you, or your dad for not paying child support? You know what I mean? So they're both fucked up. So I said, with my kids, I'm going to be the exact opposite. You know, I remember one time going to my father, I need a picture of me growing up, and he had like two. I got hundreds, thousands of my kids. You know what I mean? So just, they did, I guess, the best they could with the tools they had, but I said, I'm going to do better with my kids. You see what I'm saying? I'm going to do whatever it takes to raise my kids to be decent, normal, nice kids. You know, this kid's a genius over here. That's because of Bonnie. She's a genius. It's crazy what she knows. Straight A's. I never got an A. She gets straight A's. What the fuck? I look at it, I go, what's an A look like? You know, but you know, look at all that shit in the past. All that stuff is, you are where you're supposed to be when you're there. And it's all from everything I did in my past. Not only made me a semi-better person, it made me a better comic. Look at all the shit we know from life. You know, you see, you know, we have so much to go to dig back on, to write material about and to talk about, because we've lived life. We've lived it. You know, our pay, you know, you get a 20-year-old comic, they're 22, 23, they're funny, they got good jokes, but it's not coming from here. It's coming from the head, not the heart. When you see a comic that's talking, like you watch you, like I listen to you on the radio, going, that shit is real. He didn't make that up, you know, for some round table. That shit is real. You see what I'm saying? And that's all because of the life we've led. And I'm not saying one comedy's better than another. You could watch Brian Regan and laugh your ass off all night long. Or you could listen to Stanhope going, that's some real shit right there. That's some, you know what I mean? Maybe I'm talking in circles and I'm crazy.
No, I understand what you're saying.
What I'm saying, though, right? You know, your audience is going, what the fuck's he talking about? I'm just saying there's different types of comedy and comedians. I'm drawn to the real ones. Patrice. You know what I mean? Guys like you, Colin, Rogan's real. And, you know, all of them, there's a certain breed. But then also, I love just guys that are doing stuff that's funny as shit, you know, that, you know, you walk out, what did he say? I don't know, but he was funny.
John Mulaney.
Yeah, someone
John
like
John Mulaney's, yeah, a very polished, for a guy like me,
yeah,
That's who I intended to be when I got into comedy.
Yeah.
But I'm too fucking filthy. I was a junkie. Yeah, and I'm a felon. I don't have the heart of John Mulaney's a sweetheart. You know what I'm saying? I understand what, you know, do you have any shame in your past? At times, do you have any shame?
Look, what the fuck? It's the past. There's nothing I could do.
Yeah.
I try to make as much amends to people as I could. And my main amends was I got clean and my mom died knowing I was clean. My dad's 91. He knows I'm clean. So my main amends is to myself. People I've made amends to, hey, I'm sorry, or this or that. Look, I owe dudes money, paint stores, this and that. What the fuck? You know, if I really hurt somebody, I would say it. But now I know if I hurt somebody, I'll say I'm sorry or make amends right away. You know what I'm saying? But my past, what the fuck? It is what it is, you know?
I've tried to make amends with as many people as I could. Did you feel like there were some people that it's better left not to...
Yes.
I have like two or three people that I'd really like to call and reach out and say how I feel, but it wouldn't change anything.
Yeah.
It would just make me feel worse than I already feel about the situation, so I ignore it, you know?
I think if you're deep down sorry for shit you did, and you're not doing it again, you know what I mean? What else can you do? Plus, you're setting an example for your kid, you know? You're not that person you were. So your kids are going to grow up, you know. Like I said, my kids grow up pretty fucking stable. So, because they didn't see me out there. They didn't see me doing the crazy shit. I think the one thing I feel bad for, and I did say I'm sorry, you know, what I put my mom through. You know, I had drug dealers that I owed money to torch her car, you know. I owe money. Next thing you know, the next one, her car is on fire, burnt. You know, so and not only did I call the dealer, I go, look, not only are you not getting your money, we're getting a new car from insurance. But I felt, you know, then another time I was in New York, somebody hit her car, smashed it. So I go to that dude, yo, man, give me 100 and just go. And I took the 100. Then I said to my mom, yeah, the car was parked and someone hit. So I did put her through a lot of shit. And I did apologize to her. And I'm sorry for what I put you through. When she was in the hospital, I went in and even said, I love you. Which it's always been hard for me to say that. I could say it to my kids easily. But it's hard for me to say it to just anybody. I could say it to my wife, to my kids. But, you know, so I said, I love you. Even though she had Alzheimer's, I don't know what was going on in her head. And I apologized for what I put her through. But she saw that through the years of me staying sober, too. And giving her grandchildren and whatever. So I don't know. I mean, listen, I'm still fucked up.
You made your peace with her.
Yeah. I'm still fucked up. Look, and who buying jewelry and sneakers and... 62 years old and wearing about Nikes. What the fuck is wrong?
Oh, you've earned. You've seen the other side, and now you're here. You know, I tell you what bothers me about comedy, that comedians get hot and people come see them. But there's a handful of comics that just because they're not hot anymore, people won't come out and see them, and they're really the best comics working the circuit today. I've always felt that you're that guy. Felt that you're one of the top three guys working today. And I learn a lot from you. Like when Bonnie was telling me that you're obsessed with walking and your health and your fitness, and because you know how important it is. Guys like us, first of all, we transferred our addiction.
Oh, yeah.
We transferred our addiction.
Yes.
We live by transferring of addiction. You know, I'm not a hypocrite or anything. I did my time. I went to NA meetings and stuff like that. I got clean by myself. I made a promise. In Cuba, it's called a man's promise. I made a promise. I got clean by making a promise to a fucking cat. A cat was dead, and I said, if you save this cat, I'll never get high again. the first 4 days, I was kicking the cat. I'm like, die, you fuck. And the cat lived, and I still have the cat.
Get out of that.
The cat's still alive, and he loves me more than ever. I just picked him up today and gave him a kiss and called him my little chink. I love him because he's half Siamese. I call him my little chink.
I've never heard that before.
I just, that's great. I just said, if the improv start hiring me again, I'll quit. No, go ahead.
No, so. I just said I'll quit, and it was the toughest 30 days of my life, and I did it, and I think about 2 years in, I got on my hands and knees, and I apologized to my mother. My mother died when I was 16, but for all, I mean, you know, I couldn't even, when I would get high, I would think about her. When I would get to that certain spot of the night, you know, when that dopamine, something goes wrong, when you think about your life, when you look inside and you're like, I'm the ugliest person in the world. This is why I'm doing this. I deserve to die. There's that point in the night where I apologized to my mother the best that I could for those 28 years of abuse that I did. And I stole and ruined relationships. But again, like you, there ain't dick I could do. It's part of who the fuck I am today. Yeah. It's why I work so hard today. It's why I made my amends. You know, I went to prison because I didn't claim responsibility of my life. That's the biggest thing. Once you take responsibility, in my world, I'm the one that killed the Kennedys. Ask me, who killed the Kennedys? Joe Diaz. Who killed Jimmy Hoffa? Joe Diaz. Who bombed last night? Joe Diaz. I did it all. Who killed those kids in Iowa last week? I did it. Because it makes my life easier. It makes my life a lot easier. When you learn to claim it, when you learn to say I fucked up,
like,
you know, and that's what, those are all the parts of recovery. Learning to say you fucked up. Learning to apologize, you know.
Yeah.
Learning to, Rich Voss, if you want me to, I think I'm 56, and I think the last 3 years I've been comfortable in my own skin. I've come to terms with what I've done until then. Yeah. Every time I do a show and somebody comes up to you and says, your podcast helped me, I'm like, what the fuck are you talking? I love when people come up and want to take a picture of me. And I think to myself, if they knew 15 years ago I tried to pickpocket you.
<I know. laughs>
Like your wife is taking a picture of me and her purse is open.
Yeah,
15 years ago, I would have been taking that purse right out of there, putting it in my pant pocket and then saying, telling people I got to go to the bathroom, taking the cash out. Picking up the toilet lid and throwing the wallet in there. They're looking around. Then finally, about an hour later, we found it in the men's bathroom. It must have been the busboy. Meanwhile, it was me.
Then send them a bill for the picture.
Oh, my God. You know, that was the reality of who I was. That was a reality of who I was. That white powder made me rob whoever. When it was post time, when it was 8 o'clock at night and that, anxiety, you get that drug anxiety that runs through your body that makes you black out until you get the product in your hand. That was my last year. My last year, I would black out until I had the product in my hand.
Well, one of my lowest points, I was sitting in a bar in New York. It's called the Film Center. 40-cent drafts. You know, I'm already tapped out. I'm down. So I'm sitting there, and this girl goes, can I buy you a drink? So I sat at her table, and she goes, but you got to walk up and get it. And she handed me $20. And I walked to the bar and ran out of the door and just ran with her $20 and went and bought two more, you know, vials. But that was the lowest point of my life, probably, to do something like that. You know, now I wouldn't do it for less than 100. But that was the lowest, you know. It makes you just do shit that you wouldn't do that as a person. So, but look, it's comedy. I love doing comedy. Like people go, well, you know, it's so funny. Like when they talk about acting and stuff. Me and Bonnie just did a little part in Pete Davidson's new movie. You know that, but you know they go, well, why aren't you doing this or that? I go, I'm a comic. Everything else is a bonus.
A bonus.
It's a bonus.
Cherry on the Sunday. Yeah.
I love doing comedy. I love doing what I fucking do. I just got to, you know, you just got to try to stay relevant so you could still get people in the door. And, you know, you West Coast comics are killing it. Me and Bobby were talking about this the other day. You motherfuckers are killing it out here, you know, on the road and around the country. It's so weird how things shift. You know, during the O&A days, Opie and Anthony.
You guys
the
were
East
on fire.
Coast. We were killing it.
Killing it. I never thought of that. That's crazy.
And now, because Bobby said this on the pod, because dumb Anthony had to go take a picture in Times Square of some black chick and fuck up, you know. And we were, I mean, killing it on tour with them and doing the ONA virus. And now the West Coast comics are killing it. You know, I mean, it's everybody we like too. Fucking Bert, you know, you. I don't know Tom. I did radio twice with Tom and I had a good time with him.
Great guy.
I don't know him like, you know, on our podcast, we'll fuck around, you know, going after her saying, look, we'll play him in tennis, you know. And we go, they stole our idea, even though they did it first. You know, well, fuck, you know, but the nicest guy. So, nicest I don't guy, know him like that.
Nice
you know, I know
guy.
Bert, you, Joe. I kind of met, what's his name, a couple times.
Ari?
Well, no, I know Ari okay, well. Right. I did Ari. Are you kidding me? Fucking Ari's, you know, so that, you know what I mean? And Theo, I met Theo a couple times. Nice guy. And every time I see him, I tell him how much I like his shit on Sirius Radio. I feel like a little groupie. I go, that's just funny that they put on Sirius Radio. Well, it's the same fucking bit I hear every time, but it's still funny. So you guys, and we go, you know what? Fuck these West Coast motherfuckers. We're putting a tour together, Decrease with Kids, and we're back. We got to do something, you know. And there's room for everybody.
Listen,
but,
this it's right now, I'm just happy. I'm happy that you're doing well. I'm happy your wife is doing well. I'm happy that we're all healthy. You know, I miss Ralphie.
Yeah.
I'm sure you miss Patrice with all your heart. You know, every Saturday I think about Ralphie in the morning. And I just called the twins. I just called the Smash Brothers yesterday just because I went to lift.
Uh-huh.
I went to lift and then I went to cryo to freeze. And while I was in cryo, I go, this is what Ralphie should have been doing on Tuesdays.
Do you know?
Ralphie should have been coming home on Sundays.
Yeah.
First flight out, sleeping, eating dinner with his family, working out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and leaving on Thursday. Since he didn't do it, now I have to do it for him.
Well, you know, I mean, addiction is powerful, whether it's food, gambling, drug, whatever it is, spending, it's powerful. It maybe in the last 6 months, I could finally listen to Patrice's comedy on the radio. If I'm in the car and Patrice comes on, I can listen to it. The second I heard his voice, I would turn it off. I couldn't listen to it. I'd get too depressed, you know, because we were, you know, I remember one night me and Patrice, I was taking him home to Jersey City and we're walking. I had to go in his house, go to the bathroom, and we're walking down the street and I go, I don't have a fucking thing going on in this career. And he goes, man, I don't have shit happening. No agent, no manager, me either. I go, we got nothing. And then we just started cracking up and laughing and just kept walking. And I remember that. And like, just, we had nothing. We were working Boston Comedy Club, you know, shit gigs on the road. And then, you know, 2 years later, things are happening. But, you know, and other people had a bond with Patrice, but me and Patrice were close. You know, I mean, I'm closer with Norton, obviously. He was the best man at my wedding, but we were all tight. I mean, me, Norton, Patrice, Keith, you know, named Little Kev came into the crew. But me and Patrice, you know, we would talk on the phone sometimes 2 hours at a time at night, just talk, you know. I'd call him about this or he'd call me about that. He was trashing me on radio one day, beat me down so bad, talking about I had a little Porsche. And he was driving an Escalade, whatever. And he beat me down saying, I'm selfish, I have a Porsche, and he killed me. And I drove home furious. And then like 2 days later, I looked up the price of his car new and the price of my car new. And I text him, I go, my car new is better than your car new, costs more. He called me up, cracking up, going, you're still thinking about this shit? Mm-hmm. I go, you're still, he goes, I forgot about it when I walked out of radio. You see, so we had so much. And I couldn't listen to him on the radio. I couldn't listen without getting so depressed. I wasn't close with my brother throughout my life when he passed away. And I wasn't as depressed. I was the most depressed when Patrice, even probably more than my mom. You know what I mean? Because when you're that close to somebody, good friends. And Billy and Bobby were close. You know what I mean? He was just such a... And Now I listen to his stuff on the radio. It's so fucking funny.
I put that Elephant in the Room on. That's the name of the album.
Yeah.
Once every 6 months.
So fucking good.
And I fucking laugh my ass off. Sometimes a tear comes to my eye because I think of what a great fucking talent he was. He was one of the headliners I went to see. 1 year I went on a headliner. I was losing my desire for comedy. I wasn't doing spots at the store, and I said, fuck it, I'm going to go watch every headliner at the Improv that year. And I think Geraldo
was
the best headliner I saw that year, but a tight second was.
Oh, Patrice. Geraldo
was just more
polished, and he was.
Yeah, at that time.
And more joke driven.
Right. Patrice was buck wild like me, talking about your pussy. And,
Well, Patrice went. Patrice had some clever shit about. Then he started getting into the whole relationship shit stuff, but it was real clever stuff. It wasn't hacky male. It was just really misogynistic, but it was brilliant. You know what I mean? Just brilliant stuff. And I said this on Bennington's. I was doing an unmatched, fucking around with Ben. I go, you know, Patrice, I was sitting down on stage before Patrice on a stool. He stole that from me. I go, it was Cosby and me. Okay, and then Patrice took it. And fucking Bennington fucking killed me because I was just fucking, and they just, the internet, the Twitter, and it was just so fucking, they just beat me down saying, Patrice stole the sitting down from me. His funeral, I mean, the numbers, he fucking, it was packed. And everybody went on and talked. Of course, I headlined. I closed it out. Kevin Hart went on, Colin before me, you know. They're going to use me last, of course. I walked up at his funeral, and I go, before I get started, I just want to say, after the memorial, I'll be out front selling my CDs. But everybody who spoke at his funeral was funny and serious, and there would be laughing and tears, and, you know, he was just such a... He would be the best comic hands down would be the best comic right
now. You know who said that a couple of years ago? Bill Burr said that in the main room back there doing the spot. And he goes that if he was alive today, he'd be fucking it up. That's crazy.
He was so controversial and he was so honest. You know, he always took the right side. He didn't always go, you know, with you know, if it was a black issue, he didn't always go with, because he was black, he goes, well, you know what, if you're wrong, you know, this is the deal, you know what I mean? So whatever, he was just a lot of great memories, a lot of good memories, standing late at night out in front of Boston Comedy Club, me, him, Keith Norton, just fucking trashing each other all night. Me and Patrice were walking from the cellar, and we stopping at Boston, and these guys are out of their mind, but Ben Bailey and DC Benny were there, and me and Patrice walked down, we beat them down real quick, verbally, walked in, beat them down, and walked out, right? And they think they beat us down, like, Ben and DC Benny think they beat me and Patrice down. I go, not in a million fucking years. We came in, we knocked you out, and left, and we kept going, and we just walked down the street laughing. It was so much fun back then. Just so much fun.
You know, man, this comedy journey is a fucking... So you've been doing it now how many years, comedy?
35.
What's number one advice you have for comics, if you had to give anybody advice?
To just keep writing and get on stage wherever the fuck you can. I don't give a fuck if it's a knife fight. If you can do 10 minutes there, do it, because you're going to learn something. Just get on and I see, here's what I, and two, and study comedy, know the history, know what the fuck.
That's what I did. I really studied. Yeah. I
used to go watch comics and headliners and ask questions. Just like if you're going to the gym or your work, if you're, you know, taking any type of boxing or martial art, you're asking questions. When I used to go to, you know, when I first started going to the gym, I would ask, hey, how do you do this? Just ask questions and watch and learn. Know the fuck the history of what you're doing. That's just to me. Maybe it's a whole new scene out there with the internet and YouTube, but You know, you could go to some comics now and bring up Kennison. They probably don't even know who the fuck he is. Or Hicks. They know who's that.
Yeah, no.
Know the history. Know, you know, who fucking opened these doors. You know what I'm saying? People will come up to us and go, tough crowd is the reason I started comedy. A lot of people say that. But, you know, I don't know why I said that. It just maybe for some narcissistic ego fucking reason. But I knew I studied comedy.
I studied it also.
I studied it. I listened to it. I watched it. You know, I
chewed it. I fucking swallowed it like cum. I did everything. I had to. I knew that for you to do this, you got to absorb yourself. And all styles. Yeah. Like, I watched the guy that cut watermelons. I watched. Yeah. One of my favorite comics, I'm not ashamed to say that, is the puppet guy.
Which one?
If you've seen him live, you'll die. The one that died was brilliant with his crack addiction and the phone booth on Tuesdays that he had the puppet. The one from New York, the one that his dick had a little notch on it so he could snort coke out of it.
Otto and George.
Yeah.
Holy shit, I used to work with him all the time.
Yeah, that's brilliant stuff. The clean one, what's the clean
Dunham.
One?
Jeff Dunham.
If you go watch Jeff Dunham, unless you're a hater, you'll laugh a little bit.
Same with Carrot. Carrot Top.
I haven't seen Carrot Top in years. But
he's the best prop act. If you're going to do props, he's the best, right? You know, how many fucking prop acts are left? So you're right.
It's true. Study your comedy.
Study it.
When does this creepy...
Creeps with Kids tour. If you want tickets, creepswithkids.com. Starts in October.
And it's Creeps with a K, right?
Yeah, creepswithkids.com. Robert Kelly, Jim Florentine.
Another guy that nobody really talks about is that fucking Robert Kelly.
Oh,
I don't know if people know that he's a force to be reckoned with. A force.
Are you kidding?
A force. I saw a special that looks like some Indonesian kid shot at the Comedy Cellar. The Comedy Central picked it up. They play it late night. I was rolling. He went on a fucking tear for 20 minutes about fat. I was fucking dying. Another guy that's a powerhouse of a comic that nobody talks about.
Well, now he just got that Netflix.
Degenerates. Right. So it's him.
Him.
It's a good lineup.
Oh, yeah. Miss Pat. Donnell Rollins. Adrian, who's funny. I don't know how to say her last name. But and just one more. I can't think of it off. Bobby is a fucking monster.
Bobby is a fucking powerhouse.
I know. Listen to me.
People have no idea. That's why it kills me at this. Yeah, you got your Sebastians, you got your Bill Burrs, you got your Joe Rogans, you got your Dave Chappelle's. I can name you 10 other killers that you'll pay $10 for and go, what the fuck was that?
I know.
And Bobby Kelly's one of those fucking tornadoes.
This tour, the Creeps for Kids, Florentine's been at it for
another savage.
Bennington is so fucking good. One of the best radio hosts in the business. And me, who's semi funny at times, we're keeping the tour to like $25 a ticket to see four fucking headliners. So creepswithkids.com. And if you want to see the best roast ever, go to vossroast.com. It's the best roast out there, vossroast.com. It was Murderer's Row. Creepswithkids.com, vossroast.com. If you want to quit getting high, you can do it. There's a way you can do it. Just whatever. You can do it. You don't have to live that life. I'm not here to preach. I'm just saying you can live whatever life you want. You can live whatever life you want.
I got off the coke and everything. Yeah. I still smoke my pot to let me know I'm that dirty person.
Yeah, I could have told you that without pot, though.
I got to be honest with you. I went home before I did two bong hits. It really doesn't do nothing to me.
Yeah.
I need it in the morning when I wake up with my coffee. I like a little bong hit just to let me know I'm normal. But besides that, like it's the last teddy bear that I have.
Well,
I already got rid of the pacifier. I got rid of everything.
Well, I'm not. Listen, you put a crap table in front of me. Forget it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not. I'm not getting high. Okay, but I'm not fucking. Listen, I play lottery. Numbers go through my head every day. You know, I'm playing fucking numbers. Whatever
it's
state
a
I'm in.
For addiction for you also. Me too.
You know.
What's the deal with CBD? You doing any CBD?
No, I won't fuck around
no,
with
that. No, it doesn't have THC in it. Like, there's stuff that
no,
you
I know.
Just, okay.
But I heard.
Because I know you're very concerned about your health.
Yeah, I don't fuck with that. I heard there's, someone told me they just did a study that, I don't know. I just, look, I'm in physical, every day I wake up in some kind of physical pain. But what the fuck? You know.
Me too.
If I take something, then in a month, that ain't going to work. I'm going to have to double it. In 2 months, that ain't going to work. Next thing you know, I'm melting down Tylenols and shooting them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So I just got to deal with shit. I got to work out.
I go to cryo, and I drink tart cherry juice.
What the fuck is that?
You go to GNC and buy tart cherry juice.
Yeah.
It reduces inflammation, takes away some pain. I'm 56, and you know, sometimes I go to jiu-jitsu, and I'm like, why should I be sore for 3 days? Because you're 56, cocksuck, and you weigh 300 pounds. That's why. That's why you're fucking sore, because you're 56. You know, I lift heavy twice a week. I go really heavy, like squats and pull-ups and fucking benching. All the compound shit for over 50. This is the shit that keeps you strong on stage. But, bro, the next day, I can't walk. I go to acupuncture every other week. I double it up.
Like, I should try that for my lower back.
I go to acupuncture every other week, and then every other week, the opposite week, I go for a $40 massage. I took him one time. Tell him how good
it was. Kind of creepy. It was fun. It felt good, but I didn't expect to go to massage. He's like, put gym shorts on. Meet me downstairs.
He said, put gym shorts on. Over here. Right over here. $40.
Listen,
for an hour.
I'm 62. Okay. I go to the gym 4 or 5 times a week.
You lift or just do step? Bonnie said you.
No, I was doing a lot of steps.
Right.
Just some I took it easy. I walked yesterday. I played golf. I walked 6 miles up and down hills. My legs were cramping like fucking.
And you have the ticker and everything, she says.
On my phone. I got the step things on my phone. I'll lift. You know, I'll punch the bag at home. I got a bag in my basement. I'll punch the bag. You know, I'll try to eat okay. But I wake up. You know, I got back pains and shit and whatever. It's just here's the thing. When I was, I said this on before the podcast. Like, when I look back, I saw Elton John in 1977. He was at the Garden with Kiki D. They were on tour.
Don't go breaking my heart.
Yep. And I was probably on Quaaludes, acid, at least 3 or 4, whatever the fuck I was throwing in my system. I saw him on the farewell tour. I was on Tylenol and anxiety medicine. What the fuck age does to you?
Like I told Rogan last night, I go, I live on Cuban coffee and a leaf. And a leaf. That's what keeps me together. I told Lee, goes, where are you going? I gotta go home and take a shit. I went home and had a triple espresso, took a tremendous shit, and took a shot of tart cherry juice. So I'm due for another chase at 8 o'clock. That just comes and then an apple before you go to bed that just slides out in the morning.
Oh, really?
Like a little lizard out of a hole. You know what I'm saying?
I have the pictures to prove it.
Oh, I love you, brother. I love you.
Thank you for having me,
any
man.
Any dates you want to promote? Where you at this week?
Just creepswithkids.com.
Okay.
VossRoast.com. If you want to see a great roast, I'm telling you.
Oh, please.
Murder is roast.
Tremendous. I told your wife. It was tremendous.
And you and your wife have a podcast.
Oh, yeah. My wife hates me.
She looked good last night, your wife. She's a savage. She's getting older, looking better.
I don't see it.
Yes.
But, all right. Thank you for having me.
This was great.
Glad that we... got to hook up and do this, man.
Thank you very much, man. Listen, don't forget, next week, Friday the 13th, I'm in Dallas. There's like 8 tickets left. And then the next day, the 14th, I'm in San Antonio at the Aztec Theater. I don't know what's left. And then on the 27th of September, I'm at the Chicago Theater. All right, I want to thank Rich Voss. I want to thank the Christ Killer, but most importantly, I want to thank you fucking savages for always listening. Listen, that's it. It's Labor Day, bitches. It is Labor Day. It's official. You got fucking whatever, 3.5 months to get your fucking life together. We're down now. We're ready to attack. We're in attack mode. So it's over. Whatever the fuck you were thinking, it's over with the thinking. Now you got to put it into full effect. But anyway, who gives a fuck about that? Listen, the church is brought to you by Stance Socks. Like I told you earlier, they brought art and good design to what used to be a boring old sock. that old white gym socks that your mom used to buy you at the grocery store, remember, with the sneakers, if your sneakers slip and slide, take them back to Panty Pride. That's done. Those things are there to pass. Stance has changed the game. Now when you show a little ankle, you're also showing off what makes you special. What you're into, they got it. They got Star Wars socks. They got Harley Davidson socks. They got the Grateful Dead inspired socks. They got NFL football, baseball, basketball. They got that too. It's not just cool colors and patterns. Stance has everything from running socks to ankle socks to hiking socks, premium socks you can wear in your office. Plus, Stance socks are incredibly comfortable. I am on my feet a lot, I'll tell you that much, and some of the most supportive socks I've owned are the Stance socks. They are fucking solid. That's why Stance socks are the official sock of Major League Baseball, and they give back. Their Socks for Heroes programs send socks to deployed military personnel all over the world. I got the Icon socks myself and for my wife, and I got a pair for Lee over here. I just haven't given them to him yet. A nice blue pair of socks. They say good vibes on them. I just want to remind them what's important in life. Long story short, Stance makes a great gift, all right? So right now, today, Labor Day, the church family, Stance has a great offer for you. Go to stance.com/church. Go to stance.com/church, and you'll get a free pair of socks on with any purchase. That's stance.com/church. Grab a pen, stance.com/church. To get your free pair of socks. The offer is only available for a limited time, so go to stance.com today and get the party started. If they're not Stance, they're just socks, all right? The church is also brought to you by mybookie.ag. Listen, if you're trying to bet on the NFL, baseball, MMA, whatever, MyBookie's got it. What's this weekend? What do you got? You got the beginning of NFL. You got Khabib against Poirier. I'm telling you, if you're going to make Gidas, this is the weekend to do it. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if they weren't the best. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet this football season, college football season, college, whatever the fuck you're going to do, go to MyBookie. Did you know you can bet on games after kickoff? Ah! By the second half, it looks like your bet is going to lose. You could always take the other side. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, you try a parlay. If all your picks come through, boom, you multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of the year. Double your first deposit now by using promo code CHURCH to get 100% bonus on your initial deposit up to $1,000. Who the fuck you think? You think Uncle Joey's going to show up here with some fucking Mook LaRue? Hell no. I show up with mybookie.ag today. That's mybookie. Grab a pen. MyBookie.ag. And don't forget to use promo code CHURCH when creating your account to claim your bonus. Listen, with MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. It's that easy. Now, don't forget, like I told you in the beginning, check the Instagram, Mad Flavors World. I don't know what the fuck it is. I'll be dropping a video with the picks and teach you how to make bets every Thursday for a few weeks just to help you out. You people are a little lost. I don't know what to do with you. But anyway, go to mybookie.ag. Go to stance.com right now. And hey, you know I love you guys. Have a great holiday today. I hope you eat some burgers, you eat some fries, you burp, you get your dick sucked, you get your little monkey eaten. And it's the start of the fall. We're going straight through the fucking Christmas Eve. You understand me? I don't give a fuck what you're thinking. Listen, have a great week. We'll see you Wednesday morning. Stay black. Kick this motherfucking Mule Lee.
Bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss the earth so much. I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space. On such a timeless flight. bars ain't the kind of place to raise your kids. In fact, it's cold as hell, and there's no one there to raise them. If you did, my job 5 days.